Ladies and gentlemen, on behalf of the California Angels and the City of Los Angeles, on the occasion of Her Majesty's royal visit, please welcome internationally renowned opera star Enrico Palazzo.
Yes, he's in the intensive care ward at Our Lady of the Worthless Miracle.
Welcome, everybody. This is Ben and Robbie, your Prospects Power Hour folks with the Palazzo Podcast family. And we are here on the night of the trade deadline. Robbie, did you sleep at all last night?
Terribly.
Yeah.
I was buzzing from the show last night where the guys had on baseball Blue Jay GM. Ross Atkins was on. I know they had a lot of guests on last night, surprise stuff. So that was pretty exciting. I was just excited to see what was going to happen today. And almost more excited, hoping that some things wouldn't happen. And we'll discuss what did and did not occur today. So yep. I was thinking about those things today. What was going through your brain?
Exactly what I thought might happen. The Braves had the last trade of yesterday, bringing in Jorge Soler, and just kind of essentially swapping one relief piece that wasn't going to be really used this year in Tyler. There we go. Sorry. Just watching the Braves hit a home run. Never mind.
I know who didn't hit it, and that's Nacho Alvarez.
Yeah, there we go. Hey. But you know, he does have a hit tonight. He started a rally.
So he's doubled his average. Good, good. So,
he's hitting 107, baby.
damn.
But Tyler Matzek and a prospect went to San Francisco, and the Braves then they're bringing back all the 2021 boys.
Yeah, that always works out.
Well, of course, you know, it's always good to try and, you know, just reunite a bunch of guys 3 to 5 years after they've actually had success.
Yeah.
But Jorge Soler, and what when they got him, I kind of thought, based on everything else they had done, the news that they got about Ronaldo Lopez yesterday, I figured they were probably done, and they were. They did not make another move at all today. So that doesn't surprise me in the very least at all. So, but, you know, the Braves are almost going to be completely absent from this show because
Am I right, listeners? No. Am I right?
but we are going to be talking plenty about prospects that got traded, along with some of the deals that were starting late night, which that is the one deal that was finalized after we got off the air, which is the Jorge Soler and Luke Jackson to the Braves. I don't think either one of them's gonna do a whole lot for your fantasy team. Although I will say it's interesting that they talked to Brian Snitker tonight, and he said he is going to lead off with Jorge Soler.
I mean, we've seen Schwarber do it. You know, sometimes you just go with it and see how that pans out. So,
if nothing else, I mean, Austin Riley is getting hot. Matt Olson has been hitting a lot better. And you got Marcell Ozuna, who's still playing at a very high level. That could mean a lot of runs for Soler.
Yeah, and I think, I think that's about enough Braves talk. And, you know, I'm sure... Everybody's fine. We'll recap if the name comes up again, Ben, but let's dive right in.
Absolutely.
Let's get to it. And for everyone, just so you know, we are recapping the prospects that have moved, because that's what the Prospects Power Hour is for you tonight. If you're with us, if you're one of the 840 strong on YouTube, we salute you. Woo. Thank you. We are getting excellently close to that 1000 monetization number. Let's get rolling through that. You can join us through the Twitter, through the Discord, Palazzo Podcast, 2Ls, 2Zs. That, oh, I got to be in frame. Zed down over. There we go.
Yeah.
it's hard to reverse that here. So find us there. Chat with us on the YouTubes here. We're happy to get into it with anybody who wants to know more about a prospect if they're part of the show tonight. And in future shows, of course, you can shout out the guy you'd love us to cover. But we've got teams that blew it up in some respects and teams that others will not think have blown it up. But I certainly can't wait till we get out to one of the West Coast teams who I think has really dug themselves into a ridiculous veteran hole that will take years to get out of. And if they don't, and when they don't win a World Series, it's going to cost some guys some jobs. So let's kick it off tonight with the Angels, a West Coast team that I didn't really have anything to blow up. They've already done that. You know, they found a way to do that. But they did acquire 6 guys. I think one of the most exciting ones is Nico Cavadas, who we talked about and deal with the Red Sox for Luis Garcia. Mm-hmm. They also got Samuel Aldeguirre, Matthew Lugo, George Claussen, Jefferson Vargas, and Ryan. Man, the name, I better double check on the names before I say I'll take that team. Ryan Zephyrjan, Zephyrjan, a right-handed pitcher. So 4 arms, 1 outfielder, and a first baseman. And I like the first baseman. They do have a first baseman, though. So
yeah, I like Lugo a lot. We've talked about him before on this on here that he's a guy who was kind of a high prospect pedigree guy coming out of the draft and was a shortstop. They moved him to center field this year and it's really worked. He really is a natural out in the outfield, probably more of a left fielder, but enough arm to handle right, shows well in center. I think for 2 deals, these 6 guys are from 2 trades. The Angels actually did quite well, I think, just in amassing talent out of trading 2 relievers.
Yeah, I mean, I agree.
Claussen's kind of turned into a guy that a lot of people think is a big-time arm and prospect. That's, you're getting some legit guys out of Estevez was your closer, but then Luis Garcia was maybe going to be your closer in waiting. But now Ben Joyce time.
Yeah, which I mean, if you're the Angels and you're trying to deal from a position of strength and get back something that can help you in your future, you're patting yourself on the back for what you did in 2 veterans moving. You know, you were able to make a deal that makes sense for your future without giving anything up, and potentially you've now entered in a dynamic arm in a position that garners a lot of attention, which is the closer role for Ben Joyce, which when he was drafted, that's what everybody was saying. And they were all excited about it. And he went, you know, to the Angels. It was the right team for that guy to go to. So we'll see how rest of season goes. First thing he's going to need are opportunities, you know, save hold opportunities. We'll take any of them. And I say that because they might not be leading games, but they might put him in you know, the 8th inning with 2 outs or in the 9th when it's tied. And that's why I'm just, you know, referencing holds, not specific saves only. But yeah, this is going to be an exciting guy that when healthy should provide a lot of fun. And because of the deals they made, they've saved a few bucks as well. So what they do with that in the offseason will be interesting to see. But unlike last year where the Angels acquired a whole bunch of guys, and then a couple weeks later, we're like, oh, this didn't work. DFA. And they sent off, what, like 4 guys, 4 legitimate veterans?
Threw them all on waivers, which that is one thing, folks. They still have – there is not technically the waiver trade deadline anymore because they don't have it in the same way. You can pretty
much – it was retractable waivers. That's what it used to be. That's what made it fun, because a team could say, we're putting all-star so-and-so on waivers in August, and then a really bad team would claim them, and then they're like, well, we're not going to make a deal with you. We'll just keep them.
Yep.
You know? And then once upon a time, Alex Rios from the Blue Jays got claimed by the White Sox, and they couldn't work out a deal, and Toronto just said, take them. Yep. We don't want them on our books.
And, you know, the only reason that the word deadline used to come into a play was that September 1st was the cutoff if you weren't on the roster.
Right.
And you weren't in the organization by September 1st, you couldn't be in the playoffs. That is gone now. If you are, you can replace anyone on the act or anyone on the 40-man roster who gets injured. So you can waive a guy on the second to last day of the season, work out a trade, get him on your team, and say, "Oh, gee, our backup infielder just went down with, you know, he's not very good itis, and so we're going to now put him on the injured list and bring in this guy that we just acquired off of waivers." You can do that logistically, but it's got to go through the league office, and I'm sure the league would office would kind of have some things to say about that. But regardless, there's an option there. And so we could still see more trades. We aren't necessarily done here. But before we hop into the Athletics, which is our next squad here, Mike VA, by the way, hi, Mike. Mike did a great job last night, was part of that show we did last evening. And he's mentioning Jackson Holliday, who got the call-up today after all the Orioles trades were, all the dust settled from their trades. Jackson Holliday is coming back to the big leagues, folks. So, I highly doubt he's available in your dynasty league or even in your keeper league. But if you're in a shallow, 10 team redraft league, you sure got a shot there. So, that's going to be a fun one. David makes the comment that, hey, we're still waiting for Mayo to get his chance, which, you get a good hamburger, some bacon, Mayo will get a chance.
Just saying. Okay, on to the Athletics here, because right now we're on track for a 3+ hour podcast, and
we don't
have that kind of time. So the Athletics made two deals. The most interesting one we'll cover second. So they traded away pitcher Paul Blackburn. They got back Cade Morris, relief pitcher from the Mets. And then the 3-for-1 deal was found money. Relief pitcher Ursig went to the Royals. Excellent move for the Royals. They gave up potential future Ursig in Will Klein, but also Mason Barnett and then outfielder Jared Dickey. So Klein was someone I was interested in, Ben, for relief pitcher sleeper type. Mm-hmm. And I picked him up in a dynasty league that's near and dear to my heart. And he's been up and down. He did not start well. He just got called up yesterday, I think, which was probably like the potential of a deal with his name in it. So they got him up probably just so he could get on a flight with whoever else were on the team was moving to the, to Oakland. But what are your thoughts here on Barnett? I know we've talked about him before on that weak Royals system. I feel like he could have been one of those big three, next three that we got to in the offseason.
Yep. And that's exactly it, where I was going to go with that is he's probably established himself at that level. I don't know if I would have personally put him there, but he's really shown out. He's had a pretty solid year. It's one of those where a 4.91 ERA isn't going to really turn a lot of heads, but in double A, he's striking out more than a batter per inning. He's gone out there, taken the ball 19 times, 91 innings. He's shown himself to be a pretty solid overall pitcher. Not a guy that's going to blow you away, but the type of guy that you could maybe dream on. This is a future, back end rotation guy. And sure, that's always got value. I will say the one that I'm kind of interested in, I'm going to look this up because I can't, for some reason, my brain doesn't want to remember where he went to college. There we go. Jared Dickey, Tennessee. He's a Tennessee boy. And he was on those really good Tennessee clubs for a couple of years, got drafted in the 11th round last year by the Royals. And he's put up a solid overall line this year, 269, 784 OPS, 9 home runs, 8 steals, just kind of doing a little bit of everything. 64 strikeouts and 290 at bats, which is, that's not half bad. So, all those numbers look solid. He looks like the type of guy to me who would work out very well as like a fourth outfielder. Okay. And that's a, you're trading away, essentially, like you said, found money, and you're potentially getting a fifth starter slash, you know, multiple inning reliever in Barnett, Klein, who could be a very solid relief arm, and Dickey, who's got the potential for a fourth outfielder. None of those guys probably delight us in fantasy, but they all could have pretty good value.
Yeah, they could do the one thing Oakland has been trying to do, which is they could help to stabilize with some depth. They're not the ceiling, but they are guys who could potentially have an MLB level floor. So one team that made a lot of moves, and I know he was on the show last night. We weren't able to get him back tonight, unfortunately, Blue Jays GM Ross Shatkin. So I think it was 13 players, you said, Ben, that have now joined the organization. So I'm just going to
roll. 13 prospects.
Yep. 13 prospects. Charles McAdoo joined today from Pittsburgh for the Isaiah Kiner-Falafa trade. Now, yesterday I thought I had heard Ross say that he wasn't willing to trade the falafel, but I guess that was just like jockeying to get a better return. So we can talk about the return after I rhyme off the rest of the guys. Unfortunately, the Jays acquired a catcher, Jacob Sharp. I mean, every team needs one. This was part of the Yimi Garcia deal in which they also took Jonathan Clase. Kikuchi deal got them Will Wagner. Jansen deal, Cutter Coffey, Edison Polino also in that deal. Kikuchi deal, we all know Loper Fido was the later name added in. And what was the other one here?
Jake Bloss.
Bloss, thank you. The pitcher that it was very funny looking at some of his stuff on social media. They were like, Bloss was fair, one for one. You know, I don't know why we gave up more. We don't know the behind the scenes things of what was going on within Houston for that. But yeah, it does seem a little off. But at the same time, Kikuchi's getting it done. And that's Houston's a team that needs to get it done. The peripheral numbers, the fantasy numbers, don't look good. But when you dive in just one layer deeper into percentages, Kikuchi's been an incredibly effective pitcher. But he has given up hits or put a guy on base at the wrong time, and that's why the ERA is inflated and other things. But anyway, they also acquired a Nate Pearson deal, Yohendrick Pinigano, nailed it. They also got RJ Schreck. Jake Bloss was the guy that I had forgotten earlier. Gilberto Batista, Josh Rivera, and finally Jay Harry. And that was with the Trevor Richards deal. So the Richards deal was the one I would say for sure Toronto didn't want to, you know, kind of lose that. The Justin Turner thing, getting RJ Schreck, sure, you know, but really to me, they made two great deals, and it's a matter of what they're going to do in the next 10 to 14 days. Are they going to find a way to have Class A in the outfield, Loper Fido in the outfield, and what are they going to do with their pitching mix up? Are they going to, you know, what's the rotation going to be rest of season now? Because you moved out Kikuchi, so you need to have somebody in. Now, they also, we didn't discuss the fact that they traded Kiermaier, which shout out to one of the marketing people at my place of work who texted me and said, why didn't you tell me that Kiermaier got traded? And I said, we'll cover it tonight. And you know what? At minute 18, we're covering it. But he was traded to the Dodgers for Yarbrough. Yeah. And I think that's because Yarbrough is going to slide into the rotation as a please go and pitch as many innings as you possibly can and get as many ground ball outs as you possibly can because we're punting the day you start. Yeah. But on the prospect end, Ben, what do you think about some of the returns here and ceilings?
I got to say, I've seen a lot of places online that love the Kikuchi deal, which I gotta say I do too. Of course, the Blue Jays are going to get themselves a son of a former major leaguer in Will Wagner. I mean, that's just what they got to do. You know,
par for the course.
Yeah. But the deal that I really like and I think could do some stuff here is the Pearson deal, and Yohendrick Pinango is a. He's a guy who took multiple years in high A to finally get it, but he's gotten it. And now he might be a guy that takes a year or two at each level just to advance. But once he does, the guy has a lot of raw power, and he's not a guy who's, you know, all or nothing in that power. When he's on, the guy really gets good contact rates plus power. And so that's kind of what he's shown in kind of streaks this year. But the one that really I like there is the Josh Rivera. This is a guy last year, short of Dylan Cruz was the best hitter in the SEC. You know, that's coming out of the University of Florida. He's a legit shortstop and can really hit. That's something you can play with. That's something you can work with as an organization. And I mean, if you move him over to third eventually, if maybe he's the guy who comes up and moves Bichette over to third, however you work that, there's a bat plus the ability to play on the left side of the infield there. And you got him for a reliever that you didn't have necessarily for sure plans with. He didn't know if that's going to be your, you know, if Pearson was going to be for sure a closer, great. But right. then he comes out like the week of and says, you know, I would be open to the idea of going back to the rotation. You're like, oh, no, like that's just killing your own value in the trade market right now here, dude. But I did see that David put up here that IKF wasn't on the block, but the Pirates made an offer that they couldn't refuse, which McAdoo has he moved to third base this year. Found a position that he really liked, and his bat took off. And so he's turned into a guy who's in like top 200 prospect consideration. And so that's a pretty solid return for freaking IKF, you know? Like,
yeah, I mean, and the reason that that deal's able to happen is that you've got the extra year of him. And then again, yep. for Toronto, you've shed his salary for next year too.
Yep.
Which you can go ahead and ideally, you know, make Toronto make the change. Don't go get a veteran middle infield type to block your guys. Give them a chance.
Absolutely.
One of the other things here that David also said was pizza tonight. Mayo and pizza isn't a mix. It is. That's how you make your dipping sauce. You get a little taco seasoning, some spices. Oh, yeah. Oh, yeah. You mix that in, a little salt, a little pepper. You make that, then you dip your pizza in it, and you eat that up. Now, I don't know how drunk you need to be to do that. I can do it sober.
Remember,
I like the way it makes my body feel.
This man is a chef, folks. So, pay attention to what he has.
I have an 8-year-old son who we make pizza at home. I make the dough, and he's like, can you make the special sauce, Dad? And I know he means, can I take our taco seasoning that we mix up at the house and throw some mayonnaise in it. And the odd time I've made the mayo and I showed him how you do that with an egg and fun stuff. But we're not talking about that emulsification tonight. We're talking about the emulsification of these new prospects on new teams, which will get us over here to the Cubs, who made a couple of acquisitions through one trade with Mark Leiter.
I do want to mention one question here. Is it okay to drop Nuelve Marte? And
I mean, what kind of a league are we talking about here?
Yeah, I would say that there's some context there that we do need to know. What I will say is the Reds just brought in Ty France. I don't know what there's going to be available for DH/first base/third base at bats going forward. So that could factor into things. And they also they got rid of Slater. That went the other way. But, you know, the Reds kind of did some weird things, and we're going to get to the Reds here later. But they kind of sold and bought at the same time, so it's kind of a weird combination. But
it's the one foot in, one foot out. You're not totally sure what you're going to do. But I would say if this is redraft, yeah, for sure drop Marte. And if this is a dynasty league, absolutely look to deal him. I think you also need to look at his prospect track record and the fact that he got hot and then what happened shortly after, pop for PEDs. So let's not go saying this is a legit power bat. It doesn't mean he can't still have a long career in Major League Baseball, but that like peak that we saw, and even coming up post suspension, right? Like he was really hot and then, you know, cooled off and all that. That's what he's been as a prospect. He's been somebody who at the lower level dominated. As he's gotten up, it's gotten harder and he's become more of a two true outcome guy, not a three. David saying ranch for dipping pizza. Yeah, sure. I mean, if you don't want to try, go ahead.
Well, when you're an American, you dip whatever it is into ranch. That's just what we do. So
I was just going to say, you guys also are too ignorant to put pineapple on your pizza. You know, you take the exotic fruits and you mix it up with a little bit of bacon. Okay, let's get back on here with the Cubbies. So Mark Leiter Jr. went out. Ben Cowles came in, an infielder, and Jack Neely, who is 6'8", 245 pounds of mustache. Yeah. This is a true relief pitcher here. Yep. I really liked him two off seasons ago with the Yankees. He's been very good at AAA this year with a little bit of time at AA. I don't remember if that was rehabbed or not for him at that time, because I think he was AAA last year also. So Neely, I like the addition. And again, Leiter is, like a bonus that the Cubs were able to move off the roster. And you've got Pearson up. Pearson could just take that job from Leiter too. So
yeah,
I like the move. What do you think about these guys?
I don't know that the only thing I could see here is Neely is a guy who wouldn't surprise me next year if he is working in the seventh inning and a holds guy for you. I don't know that this is a closer, but he's a guy who gets enough strikeouts that he should factor into hold stuff in the middle of the game.
And his whip this year has been pretty good. I think it's 1.16 or something like that. Like that's okay. You know, like, you can put that guy in, and when he gets somebody on base, you can leave him in because he has the ability to end the inning without the ball in play. So I think those are, it's a good option to get him. Dodgers will move quickly too, because I know we're going to get slowed down with other guys as we rock and or roll. Dodgers acquired Moises Bolivier from the Red Sox and Oliver Gonzalez, a right-handed pitcher from the Cardinals, in addition to veterans, you know, Kopech, Deal, Edmund, Fetty, all that, all those boys that moved, so.
So the thing I'll say here, you got two guys who are like DSL prospects. They're so far away that trying to predict anything out of either one of them, nah, you just can't right now. But the stinking Kopech trade, getting a guy like Oliver Gonzalez, who's just a lottery ticket, but a lottery ticket, fair, 6'4" arm in the DSL. This is why the Dodgers stay the Dodgers. They grab a guy like that on the back end of a trade where it seems like all they're getting is major league talent. And, you get one of those guys out of those deals to turn out. And you've won that deal. Never mind what you got for production that year out of the deal that, when you made the deal. So it's the little things that they do when they make a trade like that, that it helps their organization so much. Eddie's here. Hi, Eddie. And he says that, Robbie, you were over the top funny last night.
Bellissimo, Eddie. Grassy. I did get a Twitter DM from a reputable NFBC player who said, you were so funny last night. I said, thank you. No one I know agrees, but I do appreciate those that got it. Thanks.
And then he said the only player he got a boost from was Joey Loperfido, that should be a pretty decent boost moving to Toronto Stadium for him.
Absolutely.
Hitting lefty. And he was hoping that Outman would get traded, but nope, which Dodgers released one of their guys, but not multiple. And in fact, the one guy that they did release is technically not a prospect, so he's not on this list, but we can get into him when we get to the White Sox. But Dodgers, I thought that they would let some of those guys fly, another Michael Bush type of deal, and they didn't. So
yeah, I think if Outman had been able to even be league averages or whatever, 230 even average, like batting average, his defense is fine. It's just that it got so bad the second half last year, and then his hitting, that is, and continued this year. They just couldn't afford to put him in the lineup, because this is this needs to be a very consistent lineup 1 through 9. Of course, they have superstars, multiple superstars, but they can't afford to have the back end drop off. Like a lot of teams, they'll punt, the seventh and eighth guy. That's where you put your catcher and your utility type middle infielder who's, starting at third for some reason tonight. And then you have your potential prospect-y defensive minded guy who's ninth, but he can run. The Dodgers don't really set it up that way. They set it up like, let's keep putting the ball in play. Let's keep moving the guys around, and you need to be able to hold your weight. This isn't Seattle, right? A 210 average does not make you the leadoff hitter like it does with the Mariners. Shots fired. Damn. But okay. So here we'll go in here to San Fran. They had the Soler trade and Cobb deal with the Guardians. So Soler brought them in. Sabian Sabalos. There, I just had to think about it. Yeah. Sabian Sabalos. I like that name. Sounds like a power hitter. Third baseman. And Cobb brought them back left-handed pitcher Jacob Breshana?
I think Bresnahan is what
Bresnahan?
I was
hearing. Oh, that sounds better. Yeah. Bresnahan, the lefty. So, Ben, is this a meh situation, you know? Or is this okay?
I think it's two flyer guys, which I kind of like the idea. Bresnahan, 6'4" lefty who was drafted out of high school last year by the Guardians, which is, here's the interesting, they drafted a 6'6" lefty and a 6'4" lefty out of high school last year and traded them both this year.
Which we did talk about the fact that they typically don't draft the high school guys.
Yeah.
They are more of a college team, and perhaps this was part of the plan, right? But see what they can do and move on.
Bresnahan has 66 strikeouts and 50 innings this year. So very solid, 2.70 ERA. You'll take that. I will say that I haven't seen enough of him to give you much of a, this guy's going to be elite, this guy's going to be meh. I don't know. I don't honestly know his stuff that well. Sabalos, I know from covering the Braves, he's potential power there. But he's been kind of a gap power sort of guy. And in fact, the guy who I initially compared him to when he came into the organization, CJ Alexander, has kind of turned into that type of guy now in the Royal system, where he's a lot of doubles. And so that's, it can work, but you know, if he can handle third base, that could work. So,
yeah. All right. Well, we'll go right into Seattle. Seattle was able to take a DFA Ty France and turn it into Andrew Salcedo, a catcher, formerly with the Reds, and they took Ryan Stanek and made him into Raylan Thomas, an outfielder. I honestly don't know either guy, and the catcher I don't even want to hear about. So, what's the deal, if any, with Thomas?
They're both just so far away that it's hard to. They're just kind of flyers, and I mean, the one thing I like about Thomas is there's some really high-end ceiling tools, but they're also really low floor. I mean, this could be a guy that never makes it out of full season ball or out of his first chance at full season ball, but it's also a guy who could, if he puts some things together, could turn himself into a pretty darn valuable player. It's just there's a lot of variance in that profile, which makes sense. That's who you're getting when you trade away Ryan Stanek. You know, it's so.
Yeah, it's not Kikuchi. You're
wow, you're not, dude. Yeah.
Oh, we're gonna have sound effects. We're gonna. All right, so I'm gonna rhyme off the Marlins here, of which there are many. So bear with me, everybody. We're going all the way back to the Ariz trade earlier this year because we're talking about prospects in the system, and you don't need to just count the last 72 hours. So. We've got Graham Pauly here, Wilfred Lara, Jared Serna, Juk Suk Shim, Adam Mazur, Woo Suk Go, Will Schomburg, Jacob Marse, Dylan Head, Kyle Stowers, Andrew Pintar, Robbie Snelling, Abraham Ramirez, Garrett Forrester, Augustin Ramirez, Jay Besharz, probably just fudge that one, Connor Norby, Nathan Martorella, Davison De Los Santos, all in the organization. Now, can you name the three players that aren't real that I just said, Ben? I'm kidding. They're all real.
I thought you said everyone, but
yeah. If I had to lead with one, I'd say Wusuk Go. That just doesn't sound true. But he has been Wusuk disappointing. So, or he is Wusucked. I guess we could say that too. I guess I screwed that one up. But anyway, there's a ton of names here. You know, the Diamondbacks with the puck trade, though, that's fun. The Jazz trade with the Yankees, I think they've got, you know, some
solid return.
Yeah, solid return on that one. There's a ton of
Padres returns were both good.
Yes.
And frankly, I thought they got a lot more for Brian De La Cruz than should be expected. They got a legit like catcher / third base. So guy who's probably got a chance to be a backup catcher. They're converting him to catcher this year from an infielder in Garrett Forrester. Yep. And then Junsuk Sum or Shim, I really liked him in the Pirate system. I thought he was he probably would have been in one of my guys who was on the next big three. We're talking about Pirates next year. But this is a system you need to know simply for there's going to be a number of these guys you will see rest of season. I think it would make perfect sense to see Davis and De Los Santos tomorrow. They just traded away Josh Bell. First base is open. Makes perfect sense. Connor Nordby, I don't see any reason why he doesn't pretty much play all of August and September. Then you go down. Kyle Stowers should be playing every day for them. Adam Mazur should get a lot of starts down the stretch for them in the rotation. Graham Pauly has played all year in AAA as kind of a utility guy. I mean, this is a... But what I like is that there's a number of guys here who are quite a ways away, too. Abraham Ramirez was a guy that I've been watching with the Yankees in the DSL and really liked what I've seen. And so there's guys that are going to be an impact guy in the next year, and there's a whole lot of guys that are a long ways off. This was a really good spread. If you're going to be the Marlins, getting quick return guys and getting a lot of just talent guys, too. So...
Yeah, it's honestly like this is a system overhaul that that the Marlins could choose to do a few things with. And that's why I have titled myself as Peter Bendick tonight, because I think he did an excellent job of taking a lot of their pieces. The Marlins had so many triple A guys that could, would, should be able to put it together that genuinely didn't. And when they started to make the moves, Ariz was, you know, one of the first ones to fall. It was like, oh no, they're punting already, da da da. Well, not that they're punting. It's one of those situations where you try to build a core and it doesn't work out. You know, we've all seen it with our teams where outside of the Dodgers, where they've, you know, been able to add elite free agents or pending free agents who they've then extended. Like this is a great way to go about doing it. See if from this list in the teens, you find three MLB regulars. And then a couple pitchers can come in, cycle in with good health and perform. Well, that's excellent. It's a matter of also keeping the guys within your system and bumping them up as they continue to come up. Because you've got a couple high school pitchers that are in high A now that should be or low and high A now that should be able to work their way up over the next conservatively three seasons to be on the cusp. Well, all of these players could also be knocking on the door. Now, you might want to see Ramirez, the catcher who came over in the Jazz trade from the Yankees. You might want to do what Ben, you talked about before with catchers where you set them up with your pitching core. So you assign all those guys together to work together. Is that what they're going to do? I mean, cool. Anything like that would be fun, right? We'll get to see how that falls out. But like you said, you could have Marseille's had a pretty crappy year, but he was highly touted last year. You could have him pressing in AAA and something might click. Like you said, Stowers could be up and he could be somebody that you not necessarily burn out, but you just continue to put out to see what you get out of him. Like,
and David's in our chat here on our podcast tonight on the YouTube, but he also made a comment today on the Discord that I took note of. The Marlins traded 10 of their active 26 players. They had turned over almost half of their active roster today. But this is what you do. If you're going to do that, I mean, even they were trading away relievers and getting really solid return out of it. I mean, they traded two relievers to the Padres and ended up with Robbie Snelling, one of two guys in the entire who... I don't know if you remember, Robbie, before the season, I put together all of kind of the major top 100 lists and did kind of a co-opt, you know, a joined list. And only two players who appeared in the top 100 of that combined list were traded today. And Snelling was one of them. Oddly enough, Dylan Lesko was the other. So two Padres pitchers. But you get one of those top guys and you got him for two relievers. I mean, that's really good trading. I mean, it's smart. But anyway, I'm impressed with how they did that. So,
yeah, considering all the shit they kind of ate over the offseason and early into the year, this was a good turnaround for them. You know, another team that was able to do something good. They didn't necessarily net one guy, you know, that came back that you're like, that is stud. But from this crew here, you could see a real positive uptick in the system's ability to feed up to the MLB team and not have guys that come up and do like Nacho Alvarez hit 106.
Oh,
just sad. Taking shots whenever I can. Just whenever I
see how you are,
man. So let's move on to the Mets here. And the Mets acquired Nicholas Carreño, left-handed pitcher, and right-handed pitcher TJ Shook. They traded out Josh Walker, Tyler Jay.
So two nothing relievers that weren't going to fit on the team and got at least something for him. That's pretty much all this is. These are Carreño, I think, might be a DSL guy, or else he's a Florida Complex League guy, but he's a Complex League guy. And Shook is like a 27-year-old reliever in AAA. So neither one of these is really a high-end value sort of guy, but that's what you get. So,
yes. David's just saying that Wusuko was already released. Yeah, he was. We're recapping back to previous deals just for the sake of getting the whole idea of the system's movement since the season has really kind of got...
Eddie mentions that for those who held on to Fab at all this season, this Sunday is the time to spend it, which if your league has some of these players available on the wire, and especially this is the week when I haven't in a number of years, but when I used to play in AL or NL only leagues, everyone would come into this weekend and have no money to spend on guys that had just been traded. And you're like, well, that was silly of you, because here's, you know, half a dozen guys coming into the league that are going to be legit starters the rest of the year, you know, or impact players. And so, you know, that's why this should be pretty much the last big spend you have on Fab. But we're going into the Nationals, and HP asks a good question, and I'll kind of bring you into this here, Robbie. When do we stash Dylan Cruz?
Yeah. I don't know that this is Washington's plan to bring him up. You know, they made the move with Woods getting him up, and he's not lighting the lamp. So there isn't really a need to go ahead and bring the next guy up when you could potentially wait. You also have, I'm trying to remember, like I know Alex Call's still kicking around, and you could have him come up and you could really try to push to see if he can regain anything that he was doing last year that was positive. There are options that don't involve you starting clocks for Cruz. And that's the only thing I'm thinking about, is really just like, you can bring him up after a certain point in time and he'll still be rookie eligible. But do you need to do that? And I don't know that they need to do that this year.
And they moved out two outfielders off their major league club. But if they had a position on the major league roster where there was a little bit of depth, it was actually in the outfield.
Yeah.
I think they can still – I mean, Lane Thomas is obviously a hit. Losing Jesse Winker is obviously a hit as far as the quality, the veteran quality play in there. But you're getting in, you know, I really like the players they brought in. And let's not forget that Juan Yepez came in and he's playing first base and outfield. And
absolutely.
He has been hot ever since he came in.
Yes. Yeah. I was going to say he has been able to come in and allow the trade to happen without a roster move needing to be made. It's more or less a lineup change at that point in time. Winker's out, you know, Yepez is in, Thomas is out. That will just create more at bats. You're not putting Yepez in center field, but the guys that they brought in, Andre Chaparro, third baseman, is in from Diamondbacks, Caden Wallace, third baseman from the Royals, Rafael Ramirez through the Guardians, as well as Jose Tania and Clemmy, who were the guys we were getting asked about last night. We were trying not to get too involved in that conversation so we could have it tonight. The Winker deal brought Tyler Stewart, a right-handed pitcher from the Mets. And that is a very nice little trade deadline for a team that I think is somewhat overachieved. And the guys they traded away, Winker, you know, to get Tyler Stewart back, that's fine. But to be able to get Clemmie is good. We talked about Tania in the offseason. I think a lot of people were really kind of hyping him up, and we were both of the mind, Ben, I do believe that he is a contact type hitter with a team at the time in the Guardians who have contact middle infielders, and we didn't know what we were going to see. Like this was the same guy that once upon a time was traded for Nolan Jones.
And no, that's Brito. That's Brito.
Oh,
Jose Brito. But yeah, no.
Was Tania also a former Rocky?
No, but it's basically the same profile.
I was going to say, am I just confusing the scouting report right now?
Like the one thing I mentioned last night on the show, this is a profile the Guardians have a whole lot of, so they could trade away two of them, but it's not what the Nationals have. And this helps them so much because it's a high floor guy that can play second or short and can basically be there behind what should be superstar type players in Garcia and Abrams at second and short. But those guys both are kind of, they've both established themselves enough now to where they're not going to lose their job to Tania or to Ramirez, but they're going to miss games. They're going to get hurt. And you want to have a guy who's going to step in and give you something in that time, or at least at the very least, not hurt you. And that's exactly what these guys will do. They'll come in, they're going to play a solid defense. They're going to get, you know, they may not put up a lot of fun fantasy numbers, but they're not going to hurt the lineup. That's the type of players they got here. The one that I am really excited about is Andre Chaparro. They have a hole at third base, and we had talked about if the Diamondbacks were to decide to sell and got rid of Suarez, this is the guy I thought might get some run in Arizona. And now he's coming into a team that really doesn't have a stable third base spot. And so he very well could take third base and run with it for the rest of the season just to see what you have. And that's he's a high contact guy. I think it's more doubles than it is home run power, but it's adequate defense at third. Certainly the Nationals aren't going to be trying to make a big push for the playoffs. This could be a perfect guy to give some run. Commercial!
Hey there, this is the Blotto Podcast. If you're in a hotel room right now, check to see if there's a Bible in your second drawer, courtesy of Gideon's. We'll be right back after these pointless messages.
Yeah, Chad is stepping in here with the claim the Nats had the best deadline without giving up a premier piece. I guess you haven't looked at what Toronto did. Even getting Chaparro at the buzzer for 33-year-old Floro is a great get. I agree, as Ben was just saying. Like this is a fun one. The deadline itself, I think we had a lot of GMs that were smart being able to show us at the end that they were smart. You know, they made good deals. We didn't see the like desperate reach that we have seen in years past. Yeah. We also didn't see the massive superstars getting traded or the other guys that we were like, oh, this guy will get traded for sure. We were even talking about it last night, deals that we were kind of hoping would happen. It was a little quieter on that end. The Nationals did do their thing today. And I would say moving on next to where are we here? Padres.
They only brought in one.
Yeah.
Which
they were giving them away, but they were not holding them back.
And the funny part is Eniel De Los Santos is a guy who I believe they might have either waived or DFA'd, but had the ability to hold on and look for a trade. And the Yankees came calling for him. And they traded De Los Santos and a prospect in order to get Lockridge. So even when they're the team selling a player, they still trade away a prospect with him. So that's just the way they work. So
yeah. So he's in, and then moving on to the Phillies here. Again, they're looking to bring in veterans, but they did trade Gregory Soto, which
And I
guess wasn't a fit in the bullpen, right? Just wasn't a fit.
Well, and they brought in some other nice pieces. I mean, bringing in Estevez is a huge piece in that bullpen, and it really kind of gave them that stable guy alongside Hoffman. And now you have Alvarado can really be this just crank it up lefty. You know, they've got a really solid trio in the back of their bullpen. Soto really doesn't fit into that anymore. If you can get some value out of him, do it. And honestly, I think Seth Johnson is a lot of value. I think this is a pitcher who's had some injury stuff. This is now his third organization. He was a Ray, then went to the Orioles. This is a guy I thought might end up finishing out the year in the Baltimore bullpen heading into the playoffs. So
okay.
I don't know that he's going to do that with the Phillies. They have a bit more depth than the Baltimore does, but really good, solid arm here.
Yeah. The Pirates also were making a few moves. We talked about the Quinn Priester one, getting them Nick York. I personally just am not a fan of this, but that doesn't mean that York can't still become something. But to get likely an ideal second baseman when you already have your ideal second baseman, Nick Gonzalez, was just the move, I guess, you made. I don't know why Quinn Priester is out and York is in. The other guy they acquired was Ronaldis Jimenez, left-handed pitcher, and that's in the Martin Perez deal, which I think that's a great baseball trade right there. Ben, what are you thinking on the two Pirate moves?
Well, we've talked quite a bit about this year over the course of talking prospects that the Pirates have one of the deeper pitching systems in the game right now. And they have a number of guys that are double A or higher. Beautiful, beautiful trade, I think, to clear out Martin Perez. You get a flyer on a lefty that's down in the DSL. And now you open up potentially a rotation spot for, you know, name your guy who's sitting in AAA. They also moved out Quinn Priester. You know, this is a team, they have a solid rotation right now. And they have a lot of really strong arms down in the farm. They just cleared out some spots to kind of see what they have. I don't know. To me, it felt like the Pirates were kind of doing the one foot in, one foot out thing. But they were, to me, they did it in the right way compared to the Reds, who kind of went after an old vet and traded away a piece. I think they got rid of the old, and then they opened up spots for young guys. So, hey, if we're going to do this, it's going to be with our future. If we're going to make this run, we're going to do it with our future. And we're not going to sacrifice those guys. And we're also not going to bring in anybody that blocks them. And that's a big deal, too.
I do like the fact that Pittsburgh has not been shy to move pitchers out of the organization that I think they feel are not a fit for them. You know, Rosneri Contreras is another one. And in years past, they've also had guys who, when they were very low on talent, they were not afraid to move on from guys who really weren't a fit within the organization. But then you've got like the Connor Joes of the world who just, they've stuck, you know, like they've been able to carve out a role. So, but going to the defending World Series champs, where are we here? Minute 52. Got to do it. This is the first time I've mentioned the minutes of the show tonight. I've been trying not to. 52:30. We're moving to the World Series champs. They brought in Walter Pennington and Josh Mullerus, a lefty pitcher in Pennington, righty and Mullerus. This was a deal for Lorenzen with the Royals, which necessary, I guess, that they just, I don't know. Lorenzen's like been solid this year, and it's a good move for the Royals to get a guy. And for the Rangers, they made a ton of roster moves at this time. They really didn't need to acquire for their system either. You know, if they needed anything, it would be healthy veteran pitchers because they have so many injured or high risk veteran pitchers.
And I think that's really what they did, is they cleared out. I honestly think that they cleared Lorenzen thinking that they were going to be able to swing a deal for someone today. And they did not pull that off. Whoever that starter was, they didn't get him.
And Bradford was their backup on their major league roster, who's coming back from injury. you know, and that's because he was playing with them down the stretch last year. But he wasn't, he's not an overwhelming guy. You know, he's not dominating a game for you. Mm-hmm. So, but a team that made a lot of moves here, Tampa Bay, and we talked about it ad nauseum, when they trade a guy away, it's likely for the best for that player to go to a new organization. But for us in fantasy, we might want to, you know, say goodbye. But when they're acquiring guys, we got to be looking, because they seem to get, they're throwing darts and hitting 20s. And they're hitting 15. They're hitting good guys who they can make better. So from a couple of the trades here, Matthew Etzel's now in the organization, first base, corner outfielder. JD Gonzalez, a catcher, coming from the Padres. Mac Horvath, utility guy. Brady Hopkins, Aiden Smith, Homer Bush, all outfielders. A slew of right-handed pitchers. Dylan Lesko, Jackson Bomeister, Paul Gervais, Michael Flynn, Ty Johnson, and Hunter Biggie. Biggie. And then shortstop Gregory Berrios is the final guy here. I mean, they also moved a lot, right? They moved a lot of veterans. Eflin, yep. Adams, Arozarena, Paredes, Rosario, Zuber, Savale was another one they moved. Like,
yep.
They cleared room here, and it's going to be interesting to see how the lineup is. But what do you think about some of these moves here? JD Gonzalez was a hot guy within the Padres organization, yep. As far as a catcher can be a hot guy. And he was blocked long-term for sure. Yep. So that's a move to make. But what do you think about the rest of these guys?
I really love that that they are bringing in a bunch of guys that seem to fit how they like to do things. Yeah. I mean, yep. Mac Horvath and Matthew Etzel, perfect fits for the Rays in that, Etzel might be more of a corner outfield first base guy, but can play all three of those positions, and he's definitely a better platoon bat. Horvath, definitely a better platoon bat, but he can play everywhere. And so, I mean, these are great guys. And then the outfielders, the true outfielders that they got, are all guys that you should know because of their defense. Like, they're all really, really, really exceptional defenders. And that's been a thing that the Rays have been pushing out of their outfield lately, is we want guys that can go get it in the outfield, because we're going to just mix and match in the infield. So we need those guys. But rest of season, the guy to know is Hunter Biggie. I really believe there's a chance by the end of the year he is closing in Tampa this year. Because
that's a Biggie statement to make.
Well, especially with Fairbanks still on the roster. But like I said, you can send guys through waivers and still make that deal right now. And it would not surprise me at all if they really believe that they can move him, they throw Fairbanks on the waivers and see if someone will work with him on a trade. And that could be a really interesting deal. But regardless, I think by the end of the year, either way, he ends up in the back end of their bullpen. So, and they ended up, Chad mentioned that they did get Dylan Carlson too. And it was for Sean Armstrong, not really a deal that's prospect, but it was definitely one that no one really saw coming. And,
I think it's suspect, Ben. That trade to me, you know, it's not prospect, it's suspect. We are going to get sucked in as fantasy guys thinking that there is now something there with Carlson. St. Louis and Tampa Bay have been trade partners before on good deals and bad over the past 6-7 years. I don't know. I'm going to do my best to stay away from it, but it's tantalizing to think that there's every day at bats now for Carlson to, you know, whatever term we get it together, figure it out, be coached up, whatever we want to say. I don't know if he just wasn't getting the message in St. Louis anymore, or if he just got so far away in his own development versus what the team was trying to do that he just couldn't sort it out. So change of scenery is ideal for him. And Chad, for St. Louis, it's good.
Chad brought up you know, he says that the last time that the Rays traded the Cardinals a reliever for an outfielder, Randy Arozarena happened. And I've seen this a lot today.
No, they traded for a highly touted starting pitching prospect, completely different.
That, I
mean, that's that, you're stretching that thing a little bit, but I get what you're saying. That's why we always look at those guys that come in to the race.
Liberatore was elite, but at the same time, also Arozarena barely had time with the Cardinals at that point.
Yep.
He really was not established at all. Carlson has had many, many opportunities with the Cardinals at this point. You know, Carlson has shown that he's just not going to work with the Cardinals system. Whatever it is there, there's not a fit. And maybe this change of scenery, like you said, is going to be what kicks him forward. Maybe not so much. But it's, you know, it at least gives him a shot to try something different. And we'll know after a couple of months here, maybe this offseason, he's the type of guy that ends up getting let go when he hits a free agent market. And we'll see that, you know, he turns into the type of guy that struggles to find a long-term home for the rest of his career, but keeps getting shots.
He Abraham Toros it for a couple years.
Yeah. Yeah. And, but I mean, a guy who's got some prospect pedigree. So folks are going to go, well, I can fix that. And he'll bounce around for 3-4 years just because of that. And might just do that and then be out of the league. So we don't know what we've got here, really, is what I'm trying to say. So
true. Okay, so quickly with the Reds, because they only added one guy, Ovis Portes, right-handed pitcher. This was the Lucas Sims trade to the Red Sox.
Yep. And one of the coolest parts is the Nick guy's name is Ovis. That's huge. But he is from, he is a Caribbean boy from St. John's, Antigua, and Barbuda. So,
okay.
You just, you know, one of those rare, that, here's how rare that is. It does not pop up as a major leaguer has ever made it out of that country.
Yes. Joe, helping us out with the counterpoint to the Carlson talk. Carlson isn't good. Okay.
Yeah. Yeah. I won't disagree.
Yeah.
He's going to get some shots, like I said, because he had pedigree at one point.
Yeah, for sure. So let's go to the Rockies because they're always fun and exciting and never do anything. And I was joking earlier when I said fun and exciting. Coors, that's right. So the Rockies brought in three pitchers who, if you owned them, may as well drop them. Luis Peralta, Blaylock, and Yanjarier Herrera. Peralta's the lefty, and the other two, Blaylock Herrera, are righties. Rockies are quiet. They don't make fun,
they
exciting
don't
moves.
Do
you know?
Things, and that's yeah. Neither one of these guys on the major league. I mean, Jalen Beeks and Nick Mears. Neither one of them's really impact guys, which is why you got three relievers back. That said, Peralta and Herrera both have had some pretty impressive stats in the minors this year. Now, that's coming out of the bullpen. How much value is there going to be out of a minor league reliever coming up to the majors and staying successful? That's just, let's see.
But a lot of it with the Rockies, like I shouldn't have brought it up. I should have just let it go, but I didn't. Okay. So a lot of it with the Rockies is they develop or get guys that work within their major league ballpark. So they might struggle in the minors and they like kind of kick them along and da da da. Yeah, very much, Joe says, they embody the, oh no, we suck again, Rob Schneider thing, which, love the guy's politics. So with the Rockies, they're trying to get guys who have a lot of movement, who, you know, the ball just helps to work within their, or sorry, the pitcher's natural movements help to work within the park. And they work hard on getting those guys. So they obviously have scouted these guys and feel like they could all fit within that system.
Mm-hmm.
They don't just get like most talented guy or next guy up kind of scenarios. But we haven't seen the results as far as like elite status. But when I used to listen to Rockies beat writers podcast, which all major league teams have them, you can find them. They are out there if you really want to do the work. And for a couple years, I listened to a few of their guys. And they just kept beating down the fact that, like, the park is what crushes them. The park is what they're trying to work around, like, as if it's this horrible hurdle that they have to overcome. But they don't go with, like, a steady slew of knuckleball guys, which I once upon a time suggested would be amazing if they tried to develop a camp of knuckleballers just to see what in the hell they could do if any of them actually, you know, it's a Disney movie, really. It's a Disney movie waiting to happen where you, know, you like have a full camp of 30 knuckleballers, guys that can throw 96, but they can't land it.
I want to see like Randy Quaid be the coach.
There,
you know, that's just that fits, you know.
Yes.
A guy like that can slide in and you're like,
sorry, you said Randy Quaid, not Dennis?
Yes. Yes, absolutely. I want like the goofy looking guy.
I was just gonna say, you're going for a comedy. This is very serious.
No. I want the guy that everyone walks in and goes, well, no, we were expecting him over here. We were expecting Greg Maddox and we got Mike Maddox. What the hell? You know, but that's sort of like, oh, and then, oh, wait, he actually knows what the hell he's talking about. That's why I was thinking, you know,
okay,
Randy Quaid would be kind of a fun.
Yeah, and I just think like the Rockies, they do have intelligence about what they do, but it seems like the park is such a critical factor for their success and, you know, balls in play and all these things. Yeah, very much. David says it sounds like Major League Part 7 movie. I'll write it. I will write. I'd also star in it. I'll do whatever I'll do. I'll be the bat boy in the background, uncredited role. But anyway, I just feel like the Rockies, it seems like their media puts them in a position that is almost forgiving when they don't do things, because they're like, well, you know, the ballpark makes it difficult. Da-da. Well, then Marcus Stroman should be your ace. You want sinker ball guys. You want to go out there and get like contact guys and have elite infielders. I mean, you had Arenado and you traded him away for the, you know, future organizational ace in Austin Gomber, and it hasn't gone the way that they originally thought, right? They were going to save money on him. Then they just spent it all on Chris Bryant. Hasn't worked out. So they're recovering from poor decisions, and this trade deadline doesn't help them out at all. Anyway, moving on.
So Chad made a comment here that the market just might not have been there for their rentals. And this is the one specifically that I can counter, that Blackman is more name than value right now, which that's true. He's still a guy who OBP's in the high threes.
You know, yeah, I mean, Kevin Kiermaier OBP. Got dealt, right?
Yeah, like, yep. But the Braves, I know, tried to offer a prospect similar to Sabalos for Blackman and were rebuffed. So if that is one of the things that got leaked out a bit. If you're rejecting a trade just because he's a B-level, C-level prospect for Charlie Blackman, you're not doing the trade deadline well as the Rockies. Like, this is a late 30s guy kind of looking for his last shot at a, you know, playoffs. So, I mean, that's just it. You know, what do you do for that?
Yeah. Sorry. I'm just reading. I'm just throwing a few comments out there for that. Chad is saying that, you know, trading Kevin Kiermaier, they didn't get much for him. Well, they needed a starting pitcher, and I think they're going to throw Yarbrough to the dogs, and that's what Toronto's going to do. And make him into something, which, again, like, that's, you know, that's not a prospect thing. That's our focus tonight. So back onto the prospects with Detroit here. They got in a couple catcher prospects, Liam Hicks and Thyron Lorenzo. Nailed it. Who could also be a first baseman. And they also got Eric Silva, Chase Lee, Yosef Montevallo, Tyler Owens, CJ Wines, all right-handed pitchers. Oh, sorry. I just did too many. No, I did all of them. And Trey Sweeney. Sorry, I thought I forgot. Trey Sweeney was also in that Flaherty deal. I love that Flaherty deal for Detroit if they can get Lorenzo back to what he was doing last year, which was a lot more hard contact. He's had what would be considered a bit of a prospect-y down year. Again, young for the age he's at. And Trey Sweeney, as a prospect who's been traded twice now, he's going to get that forgotten prospect, bad rap, available in your dynasty league kind of thing. I'm sure the Tigers are going to, they obviously acquired him thinking, okay, we're going to be able to do XYZ with him. Now, if that's make him into a contact guy, make him into a bench bat, they've got a plan. I just don't think it will be as shiny as it was when he was a former Yankee prospect and, you know, the world was his oyster and he was about to crush it.
The two Rangers deals, I like both for different reasons. The Carson Kelly deal is the one I really like. I think Liam Hicks is a future long tenured backup catcher in the major leagues. Really solid defensively that doesn't hurt you with the bat. So the type of guy that is going to be David Ross for a long, long time, or, you know, pick your backup catcher, you know, Christian Vasquez, something like that for a long, long time. But Tyler Owens is a guy that came to the Rangers from the Braves, and he is a really solid arm, like 5'9", maybe.
I don't like that.
And throws upper 90s. But that's just the thing, is he's came in out of high school with four pitches. Probably should have gone to college, to be frank. But he signed with the Braves because he wanted to be in the Braves development system, and had four pitches coming straight out of high school. He just isn't a guy that seems to be able to maintain that velocity deep. But he's finally moved into the bullpen, was having some success. The Braves made a deal that let him go last or in the offseason, and now he's moved with the Rangers. I think this guy is someone who's going to be a very effective reliever. You know, upper 90s stuff that's got, like, he still can throw all three of his secondary pitches.
Mm-hmm.
But when he focuses just on the, it's like a hard curve breaking slider, how, you know, kind of that mix, that cement mixer type of slider that has a little bit of downer action to it. When he's working really well with the fastball and that slider, I mean, it really could be a very effective seventh inning type of guy down the road. That's for freaking Carson Kelly, who you got for nothing.
Scrap heap player and two assets.
Yeah, that's a huge deal. And I think they got two potential future relievers out of Chafin too. So it's a very, I think where Tigers fans are going to be upset is A, they were talking big names coming into the deadline, which got Tigers fans thinking of big names coming back to them.
Right.
And maybe the Flaherty deal doesn't have that name brand guy that everyone's going to go, oh, that's definitely a dude. But I will tell you, you know, I mentioned earlier that Lesko and Snelling were the only two top 100 guys from my composite list that were traded. The closest one after that, number 102 on that composite list, was Lorenzo.
Yep.
So, I mean, the bat is legit. If he can focus on the bat and maybe move to first, maybe wherever they move him, I think that could be a big-time power asset.
Yeah, and that's what Joe's saying here. You know, he loves Lorenzo as well. I mean, all three of us do. But I agree. Catcher's not the position for it. And we've seen it before with other players where you move them off whatever that drafted or originally signed position is to one that seems to naturally suit them better. And some guys, it ends up happening at the MLB level where it finally happens and they click. Edwin Encarnacion is a prime case. As a third baseman, he struggled. He was DFA'd by, I think, Toronto and Oakland, or there was something within that range where he flopped around from Toronto to Oakland, back to Toronto. They took him off third base after he led the league in errors, moved him to first. All of a sudden, he wasn't having to think quite as much. Not that first base is easy, but you're catching a lot more than you're throwing, and the pinpoint accuracy is not needed nearly as much if you're throwing after the balls come to you at first base versus third. And he clicked, you know, so maybe that'll be something that helps the confidence level here. And then Trey Sweeney, you know, Chad is also saying that he's a sweetie on Sweeney. And I feel like we should not turn our backs on him. He talked about the stat line looking good, you know, that he could be a Javi Baez improvement upon. But I mean, that's a sunken Baez contract that Detroit's dealing with. Yep. It's a matter of, as the levels go up, is the production the same, and what's the dip and what changes? And a lot of guys, as they come up, the OBP drops, the OPS drops, and we've seen it with so many rookies. Not that he's an MLB rookie at this point with Sweeney, but as guys have come up, highly touted guys, great OBP guys, they can't maintain it once they're seeing the best pitchers in the world. So I'm not saying Sweeney's out. I'm just saying let's not think that, like, that was a hell of a steal. I think Lorenzo's the guy they wanted.
But Sweeney is saying, but Chad is saying he's the biggest Sweeney guy, and he's talking about a 255, 13, 16 line. You know what I mean? So what's that, you know, when you're a huge fan and that's the line that you're saying? Yeah, granted, that's probably a top-end realistic line, but also understand that that's – Sweeney reminds me a lot of Kevin Smith, and you remember –
Oh, like the director, actor, director? Is that who?
No, unfortunately, because I think he had a lot more
disappointing prospect. The Blue Jays had.
Yes, yes. the one-time shortstop prospect, and
yeah, he's, like legit prospect.
Yeah, yeah.
2020 guy in the minors, I believe. I can't remember what year, but I believe he was a 2020 guy. Then he was dealt in a legit trade. I think that was the Chapman trade with Oakland. And that was supposed to be his, here you go, here's a position for you with a team that you should get to play. And he just couldn't take it. He given, I think, one legitimate shot, three opportunities through call-ups where he was given playing time and could not do it. And now I don't think he's had an at-bat this year. I think he was called up by the Yankees and sent back down without an at-bat. I think that was as close as he got this year. But yes.
So, we're going to move on to a team that I think a lot of us thought was going to do a lot more. And
let's close
with them. So let's go to everyone's favorite, the New York Yankees. Okay. And they really didn't do much. They got Thomas Balboni, who does anyone remember Steve Balboni? Former Royals, like DH, way back in the day. I'm sure Dave does. Dave would remember Steve Balboni. But that just, and I guess he's like Thomas Balboni Jr. So I don't know. I just was, there we go. You know, that was what Steve Balboni could do. He could hit them home runs, but he couldn't really do a whole lot else. But that's okay. And they got him in an Eniel De Los Santos deal. They got Kelly Austin, who's a right-handed low pitcher for the Astros, by trading away, as the Yankees Twitter likes to call him, Turd Ferguson. So, yeah, that's a really...
It's quiet.
But the Yankees weren't quiet. They gave away plenty of prospects, but it wasn't like they were... They weren't out there trying to acquire prospects. Let's put it that way. They were clearing some roster spots here.
Yeah, so. Quiet on the return end. But sorry, Ben, I only wanted to switch because I feel like this is a good way to end tonight, is to talk about the White Sox and the deals that did happen, and probably more importantly, the deals that didn't happen. They were able to trade Tommy Edman. Shocking. Not Tommy Edman. Oh, my goodness. Who's
Tommy Pham?
Thank you. Not a Tommy.
Or Eric Fetty.
He went to the Royals. Paul DeJong.
Paul DeJong. Yeah, that. And see, I don't know. Were you still on when Mike went around and did his make your projection for tomorrow and what kind of crazy thing? What do you see happening?
I was. I think that was my Bassett call.
Okay, that's true. That's right.
I think that was that one.
Mine was what?
For my Snellholm. Yeah, my Snellholm.
My one that I said won't happen is they're not going to move Robert or Crochet tomorrow. And guess what? They didn't. So.
Yeah, I thought the Crochet move was not going to happen. And even his agent or whatever, he came out and said something, he'd want to sign an extension before October to protect himself and get his money. And which, like, I don't know what in the hell that's all about. That's non-baseball stuff. So that doesn't have an effect on the field. But yeah, like, those were moves that if you are in fire sale mode and you just want all of the future, you trade guys like that. But Crochet's got lots of control yet left. Robert would not get you back probably what you feel he's worth to you in some other financial ways. So they didn't make it. But just so we can cover it, they did get Yariel Perez, a second baseman, William Bergola, Alexander Albertus, Trey McHugh, Gerald Rosado. That's who came back in prospect. Eloy is out. Paul DeJong is out. Kopech is out. Tanner Banks.
Tommy Pham is out.
Tommy Pham is out. Thank you.
Eric Fetty is out.
And the Fetty one does surprise me looking at what – sorry. If I'm Houston, I think I would have preferred Fetty based on what I had to give up to get him. But I guess there must be a lot within, like I said, about the Kikuchi line, the deeper you dive, the K percentage, and all those other things that make him more tantalizing versus Fetty, who I think Fetty has 1 year left also. Whether you think that's bad money, because I know that's a thing that happens too, right? Like, Fetty's doing well this year because teams haven't seen him in 3 years, and he went over and was very good in Asia. So he's come back, and he's been able to continue that. But at some point, will he go back to the guy who was an unsuccessful major league pitcher 4 years ago?
That's a really good question. And frankly, I think they got a good return because we aren't mentioning Miguel Vargas here because he's no longer a prospect. But, you know, he was also part of the return on that deal. And I think that's a very solid overall deal. But understand that Yoel Perez and Alexander Labertus are years away. Perez, I believe, is in high A now, but Albertus is out for the year. He was in A ball. He's now injured and is out for the year. They had to get a waiver or whatever in order to allow him to be part of this deal. Their big thing was they wanted to get a guy who was going to be able to be there now. And that's Miguel Vargas. He's going to get some time finally. We talked about Lo Profito being a guy who's definitely up arrow after this. As far as for your fantasy teams, it's very, very likely that the other guy is who has the biggest up arrow is Miguel Vargas. And that's just
because he's going to finally opportunity based.
Yeah. Yep.
Yeah.
But Eddie did ask, and he mentioned this for the Marlins too. And since we're talking White Sox, who closes for the White Sox the rest of this season? And that's a really good question.
Well, two things to consider. Will they be in a position outside of Crochet starts for a save? So will there be games?
Probably not, but yeah, that's a good.
And is Tuki Toussaint available? So, because I'm pretty sure he's still in the organization.
Yeah.
And outside of, like, so they did move. I'm just checking here really quickly. Davis Martin was officially put into the rotation. I did think I mentioned him last night. So he's been somebody that I slept on. I picked him up very quietly in two dynasty leagues this offseason, thinking that would be a good one. So they've got Crochet, Flexen, Jonathan Cannon, Martin, and Thorpe in whatever order you see fit. For them, so one lefty, four righties, but the potential guys here, which is Leisure hurt? Yes, he is. Jordan Leisure.
Yes, he's on 15 day. Yeah. But the guy who I think is probably your closer in the short term is John Brebbia.
That's like almost a seniority thing too.
Yeah. Yep. And then from that point, as soon as he is healthy, that Leisure takes over that spot, which folks have been waiting on that all year long. So good for them. And if they've held on to him and whatnot, but a little bit of an outside of the box idea. I wonder if Prelander Baroa gets a shot end of year.
Oh, okay.
I've always liked the arm. I it'd be an interesting thing. Apparently Joe thinks I could close for the White Sox. I have a closer's beard, but my curveball is not quite up to snuff anymore. So
what's your entrance song? Do you require a band?
I am going to do the cha-cha. No. No, actually, I've always said my entrance song was going to be The Animal I Become by 3 Days Grace. So,
interesting.
It's got a very, very good bass intro hype up line. That was always my big thing. Marlins are the other one somebody's asked about. Who closes for the Marlins the rest of the season? And then Chad asked, who the other two guys are, or who the guys are in the rotation rest of season for the Marlins.
Okay, so circle back to White Sox closer within their system right now. Everybody ready to hop in their time machine? Corey Knebel.
Yeah, I was just gonna say. I was gonna.
Jeez.
How is he doing? Because I was just.
I didn't look at the stats. I just saw the name and was like, "You gotta be kidding me!" And he's only 32. Like he hit 32.7, whatever. But sometimes it's fun to look on this website that doesn't officially sponsor the podcast, so I won't mention their name. They have resources for the rosters, and if you look at those, you can see the names and click on the players and get the sites and whatnot. But you can always Baseball Reference, who, again, they're not a sponsor, but I like Baseball Reference. Knebel would be like one to, for the old dogs. I guess he's only coming 90 minutes down the road from Milwaukee to be part of that organization. But for Miami, I mean, the obvious thing, with that rotation is what's the mindset? You know, what do they want
to get? Joe says they're going to have their quarterback come in and
closing.
Tua's going to come in.
Well, at least he won't get hit, right? Unless it's a comebacker.
But, the guy I really think it makes just a ton of sense is Declan Cronin. Pitched very well this year, 54 strikeouts in 50 innings. And watching him, he's not gotten freaked out in any moment that he's been in. So, I don't know. I think that would probably be your best option right now. It's...
Last year they brought up, I think, maybe I'm wrong, Patrick Monteverde. I feel like they brought him up last year. Was he...
I
definitely picked him up in leagues. I'm just trying to go off memory. I'm refusing to click on things. They could always burn Adam Aller, who is within their system now. He started a little bit at the beginning of last year for Oakland. And again, these are not assets. These are who could actually start. So you could have him up and then burn him off.
Yep.
But if you're looking for anything longer term, Sean Anderson is a potential guy. Like, this is, none of this is exciting to anybody who wants to talk like future guys. You don't want to bring Mazur up unless you're going to let him start the rest of the season.
And that's, I think he is one that Chad mentioned that he is a for sure starter. I think he probably is as a fifth guy, but he's got to be getting a start every time through if you get him up in the majors.
And yeah.
You've got to be okay fear, with, right?
You brought him in. He's prospect. He's got the full control. Do you think he can be successful? And if you don't, if you truly don't, like, you know, Max Meyer is the suppression guy, but if you don't think Mazur is going to come up and be successful, don't put him in a position to fail unless your plan is after every start, good or bad, you're going through the breakdown afterwards when they go like batter by batter and talk about what the guy was thinking at this time and that time. Unless you think that is the most constructive thing for him to do. Because if you want confidence, you put him at AAA and you try to put him in a good position to win every start. If you want long-term development, the Marlins were successful at this before in their first World Series. They just put up a core of dudes and let them all struggle together. You know, pitchers, infielders, and then they all got it together. This is Josh Beckett time. Like, we're going back.
Yeah.
Miggy time. So if they want to do that, which I don't think that's what they're going to do, then sure, bring them up. But it's a ton of coaching at that point, and I don't think that's what they're going to do because they have a ton of veteran pitchers who should all be back next year and even later on this year when they get Lizardo back. And that's going to spell off some of these guys. So if you don't think that they should be there for the next, what do we got left, 12 starts, 10 to 12 starts depending on the guy, then I wouldn't do it. Just, you know, if I'm looking out for the organization as I am tonight here as Peter Bendix, I don't want to put my guys in that position. I want to burn through the Adam Allers of the world and guys like that.
The Evan Fitterer.
Yeah.
That's you know, Evan Fitterer, the Monteverde, like you talked about. Mm-hmm. Another guy, an interesting control specialist they've got down in Double A, and I've always enjoyed the fact that he almost gives up zero walks. That's Luis Palacios. But this is a guy who like tops out at 89, but he's coming from the left side and keeps the ball in the zone. So there is something there. I did want to mention for a reliever, a guy who I can't remember which one of the velocity places he went to over the season or off season. But Austin Roberts came in this year. He was a guy that they had in their system last year. And he came back this year and just, he's a different pitcher. And he's closing in Double A, 60 strikeouts and 46 and two thirds innings, 193 ERA, 0.81 whip. And he's looked every bit of it in the games I've seen of him in Double A. So that's at least a guy that could be very interesting. Is he could be an option to get some bullpen time by the end of the year. Okay. But, you know, Joe is saying, hey, we really need to discuss expansion. These teams in Miami and Colorado, they could be pretty good. Well, yeah. So
if they did an expansion draft, maybe, you know, it would help. Yeah. Or if the injured players didn't exist. You know, if all their players could be healthy, we could have more competitive teams.
So yeah. How is Nigel Wilson doing nowadays? And was it David Need? Wasn't that the other guy who was the big those were the two big prospects that were drafted in the expansion draft by the Marlins and Rockies, I believe.
Wow.
Maybe I'm the only guy in this chat Jeez. That knows that. But
yeah, I was just going to say, I don't remember that.
Where's my Titanic? It's been 84 years. Okay.
I was going to say, I remember when the Anaheim Mighty Ducks came into the NHL and they drafted Terry Yake, Guy Hebert. I mean, this is a different time. This is with Florida, who took John Van Viesbroek. You know, that was my childhood. We only got Atlanta on TBS, and we got the Blue Jays games. That was all I had as a child, were those two teams to watch. So, and Atlanta, well, I mean, as you know, Ben, they just lost. So they were so good, and then they always lost.
You should know Nigel Wilson, though. I guess I just looked him up. He was a Canadian. He was from Ontario, and I believe
pre-internet access for me. You know, that was before we could just look this stuff up. So, but he played baseball cards.
He played all of three major league seasons and finally eclipsed the rookie limits in his third major league season. He totaled 22 major league games. So,
jeez,
not so great. But yes, David mentions Charlie Huff, who I think was they brought in his cousin Dirt, who was younger, to visit and see the game because Charlie was that old, making an opening day start as a knuckleballer for the Marlins on their first day, because he was like 48 when he made the opening day start for the 93 Marlins. But anyway, that's a fun anyway.
Okay, well, we covered it. Chad's going to help us close out the show tonight with he's saying bit of breaking news that the Yankees had a deal for Flaherty. They backed out looking at some medical stuff. So maybe that changed the return from other teams possibly looking at that kind of info too. And again, it's Jack Flaherty.
Wow, dude.
So what was that info? And the legitimacy of any other team's interest as well could have swayed possibly if they got to the point with medical. So,
well, and it could also explain if folks really want to say that maybe Lorenzo and Sweeney was a light return for.
Yeah. Maybe that Flaherty. Was best case scenario. Yeah.
Maybe that's is the best thing they could have gotten out of him. So.
True that. All right. We thank everyone for listening to our 1 hour, 90 minutes. That's what the Prospect Power Hour is.
Beautiful.
We've stretched it for you guys once again. Thanks for listening. Next week, we'll be back probably talking Double A performers. If not, we'll find something even cooler and even more better to talk about. On behalf of Ben, I'm Robbie, Palazzo Podcast. Thanks so much, everybody. Love, peace, hair grease.
Prospects is a curious thing. Make a person trade everything for a king. Wyatt Langford is your one true love. For a prospect, you'll trade all the above. Don't need money, don't take fame. Don't need no credit card to ride on this train. It's strong and it's sudden, it's cruel sometimes, but it might just save your life. That's the power of prospects. That's the power of prospects.
It's a great time to save big on everything for your next project at Menards. Get free estimates fast on new energy-efficient windows from Jeld-Wen. Choose from vinyl or wood windows and customize the perfect size and unique features for your home. Save big on all Jeld-Wen windows today. View our entire selection of Jeld-Wen windows on Menards.com. Plus, the weekly flyer for other great deals happening now.
Save big.